It was May 1940, and disaster had struck the Allied forces in the Battle of France. They had been overwhelmed and outmaneuvered by the German army, and the shattered ranks of the British army and some of the French army and others were gathered on the coast of France, awaiting their doom. They looked yearningly across the English Channel to go back to England, where they would be safe, and yet the Royal Navy could not save them. They were busy with their own battles or debilitated by defeats, and so it seemed like that the British army and the French awaited destruction from the surrounding German forces. And yet in the midst of that, a call went out to just people, regular people in England, to get into whatever boats they had, and they did that, and they got into boats, from fishing boats to yachts to trawlers, and they themselves, braving the German Air Force, the Luftwaffe attacks, would cross the English Channel and go to Dunkirk to pick up these soldiers. And they'd go back and forth to do that over about a week's time, bringing over 300,000 soldiers back across the English Channel so they could fight on in that war and eventually come back and win. There was a beautiful movie, a really great movie about that, that was made in 2017 called Dunkirk, about this great kind of Dunkirk miracle at the beginning of World War II. I remember talking with a priest from St. Mary's, Father Javier, about the movie, and I remember hearing kind of his observation. He says, you know, Matt, I feel like, you know, like how those people, the little boats, all these little boats were able to move an army, that we're kind of in a Dunkirk moment now. And I think that's a brilliant observation, that we're in a Dunkirk moment now. That we cannot wait or simply hope in kind of large institutions and large movements, but we ourselves have to get in our boats, the boats of our individual lives of discipleship, the boats of our family, the boats of us being together in community, and I think very importantly, the boats of our parish to accomplish the rescue mission today, you know, of so many souls that are far from the Lord. Not waiting for big shots and big movements to accomplish it as we kind of just wait, clutching our hands on the shore, but instead, no, we to go out into the waters and accomplish the mission the Lord is giving us, to be His faithful people in this time and place. In our first reading, we have the prophet Daniel. And the prophet Daniel observed in his own day world-shaking events, the rise and fall of different empires, the Babylonian, the Persian, the Greek, each with its claim to supremacy and preeminence and dominion. And there was Jerusalem, little Israel, kind of caught in the fray in the midst of all of these different titanic movements. But God gives him Saint Michael, the great angel, to be their special guardian and guide of the Israelites. And Daniel then can see in these earthly events the rise and fall of these things, kind of precursors, samples of the ultimate end and the time of testing that comes with it. But knowing that the end would ultimately bring about what is hoped for, God's victory. There are other pre-echoes of this final reality that have happened, and that's actually what Jesus is first talking about in our gospel today. He's first of all speaking about the fate of Jerusalem itself in their own time. You know, speaking about what would happen because Jesus was lamenting that generation was rejecting Him, rejecting the things that make for peace, which is to follow wholeheartedly Jesus Christ. And therefore, instead, you know, depending upon worldly power and weapons and all these machinations, the next generation of Jerusalem, you know, would rise up against the Roman Empire in kind of a false attempt to throw off the Roman yoke. And in the course of that, in the year 70, Jerusalem would be utterly devastated, destroyed, the temple destroyed, never to be rebuilt. Million people dead in the city, dying by the sword, by starvation, by cannibalism. An absolutely appalling disaster for Jerusalem, having rejected the path of Christ, having instead embraced the power of the world to resist the power of the world, they were destroyed. And for the Jews, the loss of the temple was really the close of an age. That was really meant to be, you know, it's for the Christians who were there in Jerusalem in those years. Jesus is giving warning like, don't stay in this. Don't get caught up in this. But no, keep following me and go as the Spirit leads you. And there are other moments of cataclysm in history as well. Just last Monday, we celebrated Veterans Day, which of course arises out of Armistice Day, the end of World War I. You know, in World War I and World War II were huge cataclysm events that were, in a way, the destruction of the way the world was and the whole system and order of things swept away. And of course, those wars didn't just arise out of nothing, but were already part of a moral rot, a societal kind of falling away from the gospel that then led to all of this. But we can look throughout history of the different cataclysms that people have gone through, the Napoleonic Wars, the 30-year war that devastated the continent of Europe, or the Mongol invasions. World War II killed about 3 to 3.7% of the world's population. The Mongol Wars, scholars estimate, killed 5 to 10% of the world population. 1 in 10 people in the world dead from these wars. And so there seems to be, you know, that cycle of these world powers rising and falling and the devastation of that, you know, and those things, you know, are temporary and passing. But they do point to that finally God is the Lord of history, but there's this rhythm that keeps happening until Christ comes again. The fundamental problem is not that the right empire hasn't arisen. The fundamental problem is the fallen human heart. The human heart made good but fallen. And the real battle, you know, is that battle in the heart of good and evil. That's where it is truly fought, and that's where the greatest stakes are, either eternal life or eternal loss, as we heard in our first reading. That is why Jesus' death and resurrection is so important. Only he can supernaturally make that change in the human heart that we need. And it is he who addresses the true enemies we have of sin and the devil and death. So we hear in our second reading about Jesus, but this one offered one sacrifice for sins, that is himself on the cross, and took his seat forever at the right hand of God. Now he waits until his enemies are made his footstool. For by one offering he has made perfect forever those who are being consecrated. And so Jesus, in his death and resurrection, accomplishes this great work. He is the one who breaks the real chains that bind us and heals the real rot that attacks our souls. You know, while others really effectively just keep trying to slap Band-Aids on that, whether through ideology or promise or policy or whatever remedy they propose. So in all of these ages, in all these different times of cataclysm, in the time of Daniel, of the destruction of Jerusalem, in the midst of Napoleonic cavalry charges, in the midst of, you know, killer drones on the battlefield today, or the culture of death so deeply entrenched in Colorado, God's people have always had the same challenge and mission. And that is to remain faithful and to be the salt and the light amidst the chaos and maybe sometimes the ruins of misled and misused human freedom. You know, to be the Dunkirk boats, the little things that together, joined together, can move an army, can accomplish God's purposes. Because God's grace is always at work in those yearning prophets of the past, of Pharisees like Nicodemus who come to know and acknowledge Jesus Christ, even when they're first fearful, of the good people following Christ amidst hardship and societal upheaval. Grace is at work. The Lord is faithful. And there are always shafts of grace that pour into every generation until God's purpose is fully accomplished. And so for ourselves, the practical suggestion is to get your boat in the water. Get your boat in the water. You know, to be involved. To be part of this mission today of bringing people across that channel of alienation from God and ignorance and sin. And to be a part of God's saving of all these people around us. And the salvation that we first off to acknowledge how we need that as well. You know, I was talking to actually a couple last night, and I'd brought up Dunkirk last night, and like, you know, we've got a neighbor who, he was 11 at the time, this living in England, and he stowed away in his dad's boat, you know, and snuck onto his dad's boat, and he was part of this whole Dunkirk evacuation for a week, this little 11-year-old, and it's something that he's so proud of. You know, so amazed that he still goes back to England for like reunions of Dunkirk people and stuff like that. And he still wonders at that. And I bring that up because, God willing, one day we will wonder at how maybe we feel like an 11-year-old that can only stow away. I don't have much I can offer, but how, I got in the boat. We got our boat in the water and we served today. We helped out in our parish to make it that island of humanity and faith and grace that the world needs. And maybe someday in that reunion of the saints, I can be talking to them about, you know, they'll ask you, what was it like? The 21st century is crazy then, you know, and like, what were you doing? And, I was serving with this, I was doing that, you know. I was part of God's mission. That's what he calls us to. And so I invite all of us to think about how to get your boat in the water, to be a part of the mission the Lord gives us today, not waiting for others to accomplish what God in his grace and his wisdom and his love calls for each of us to do. God is with us. He is faithful. Shafts of grace pour into every generation, and his grace wants to work through you.